The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We've been talking all morning about the rising global tensions and potential fallout following the United States strikes on Iran. But what does it mean for us here as an island nation on the edge of Europe? On many occasions, questions have been asked about our preparedness to defend ourselves and our infrastructure. And now, for the first time since our founding, the government has committed to publishing a national maritime security strategy to look at how we do protect ourselves and the vast waters around us. Joining us now to talk about our preparedness in light of the current situation and what needs to come of a maritime security plan, we have with us retired Lieutenant Colonel Marie Gleeson, Managing Director of Navmar Leadership and a blue economy advocate, and Cathal Berry, former Army Ranger with the Defence Forces. Good morning and welcome. Cathal, first of all, have things changed dramatically because of what happened at the weekend?
Absolutely, in the Middle East, for sure. Yeah. So obviously it was a great military success for the Americans so far. We haven't seen the counter-strike from Iran yet.
Are you one of those people who stands back in awe at the precision of the operation? Because all over the weekend, every time they went to someone who might be a critic of the policy, many of them were saying, fantastic. Wasn't it amazing, the precision with which they carried out the raid?
Yeah, so from a military technological point of view, it was very impressive. It just shows the superiority of Western munitions and Western technology when they come across a near peer like Iran. It just shows that Iran was kind of kitted out with, generally speaking, Warsaw Pact, Russian-type equipment, and it's just not up to the scratch at all.
So if Donald Trump demonstrated anything, it's the massive technical superiority of the United States over all comers, probably.
Absolutely. So the military dominance of the US has been reasserted, and that was probably one of his main aims as well, for sure. But again, we haven't seen any counter-strike yet, so it's a bit early in the day to claim a complete victory. They've won the first round, but the ball is in Iranian court now. We don't know how they're going to respond, whether it will be more traditional military response, or will it be more a hybrid approach? And it's probably more hybrid from a terrorism, cyber, mining of waterways, that sort of stuff.
All right. Marie, what is your reaction to what happened over the weekend?
Yeah, I suppose very fast, very furious, high-tech response, which we've seen. I think from the maritime perspective, what's interesting is the response from Iran, or the spoken response so far. So talking about shutting down the Straits of Hormuz and the impact on the global economy. And I think that's really important that we recognise that, because the maritime domain is so important in terms of global trade and global traffic.
Now, from a maritime point of view, what do they need to do to close down that strait? Is it mining sufficient, or will they actually attack vessels?
I suppose the first question is, will they actually follow through? And I think that's really, really important. So is it a posture at the moment? Because obviously, no matter what they do, there's a significant consequence from the eastern side. And you've seen the Americans have called on the Chinese to actually, influence that they won't close down the strait. So I think in that point, it's important. I think it's also important to recognise that straight away, there's been an immediate impact on global trade. Some of the large oil tankers have already changed their courses. They've gone over to the Oman side. So already the global industry is responding to this. So it's not just a military strike. It's actually impacting on global trade straight away.
But the amount of oil that goes through that is 20%
of the world's trade at the moment,
which is massive. And I can't understand why, although Brent crude did go up in price, it settled back a bit. So there isn't a great panic that you might have expected from this development.
No panic at this moment in time, but we have to see what the next step is. So at this moment, I think there's a kind of an assumption that, it's a threat. It's not going to be carried through because of the risk, as I said, in terms of their strategic partners and the Chinese influence. So I think it's important to see what comes next.
Now, the United States, Cathal, acted with impunity. It decided, we're going in there. It's a preemptive strike. We're not declaring war on Iran, but we are declaring war on its nuclear sites. But that kind of impunity that the United States has taken for itself, and we saw that Russia took it upon itself for the invasion of Ukraine following the invasion of Crimea, and China may say, well, what about Taiwan?
Exactly. So while it was a military success for the Americans, it was a moral disaster. So 3 years ago when Putin invaded Ukraine, that crossed the Rubicon, basically, and it opened Pandora's box. Now, the Americans have followed suit with unilateral action. And the third big player in the world is China. And they're looking across the Taiwan Straits going, well, if it's good enough for Russia and good enough for America, who's going to stop us? And this sense that might is now right, and the geopolitical consequences have yet to play out.
Now, in terms of impunity, then, what does it mean for our waters? I mean, does it mean that a malign actor can just come in and snap our cables?
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head when you use the word preparedness. I mean, national resilience is really important. Ireland is not good at national resilience at all. We saw the storm even last year. It caused major downstream consequences all across the West Coast, and it took us a number of weeks to recover. Similarly, from a maritime security point of view, we're really at sea, if you pardon the pun. This is the first maritime strategy, right? Maritime security strategy ever, and the country's been around for more than 100 years. So that tells its own story.
Who are the contributors to this maritime strategy? I mean, who decides what we're going to do? I mean, you have a public consultation, and I have to ask, what would the public know?
Yeah. Well, I think the public, to be fair, Pat, probably know more than they did in the past. So in my experience, I joined the Navy in the late 90s and very few people even knew we had a Navy in Ireland. I think now, because people are more conscious of the size of our maritime domain, but also the fact that much of our energy resource, like our strategic pipelines, our interconnectors are exposed, the subsea cable network. I think most people now are very clear that we have a very strategic role in terms of subsea cables. And I think also the impact of COVID-19 on people's mindset, because we saw the impact of being an island. We're at the end of the supply chains. The majority of what comes into Ireland comes on a ship. And you saw straight away when the supply chains broke down, the increase in prices, the increase in global container shipping prices, massive consequence for us as a nation. So I think from that perspective, you know, it's really important. And it's the first time in my experience that the government has actually put the maritime in this kind of a strategic place. And that follows through on the recommendations of the Commission on Defence moving to level of ambition 2, the strategic defence review last year in terms of prioritising maritime security and maritime subsurface domain awareness particularly. So I think the current drafting of this strategy, it's a really, really important time. It's a critical moment. We need to take the right first steps. We need to identify the threats. We need to do the risk piece. But also we need to make sure the public know why we're doing it. And if we do follow through an investment, what the benefit of that investment is.
Now, when we look back, you talk about we're not good at building resilience into our systems. I mean, the idea of war gaming, which happens in maybe more militaristic economies, we don't seem to do any kind of gaming in terms of thinking what might happen. Like the LNG terminal that we desperately need, it was kiboshed by, I think, Eamon Ryan particularly, you know, presuming that the world would carry on peacefully as it has done. That's not what's happening.
Yeah, that really is a case study on where we are from a national resilience point of view. So there's an organisation called NORA in Ireland. It's the National Oil Reserve Agency. And they actually have 3 months of crude oil in reserve here in Ireland. Some of it's in Spain, some of it's in Denmark, but most of it's here on Ireland. And the reason we have that, and it was purchased 25 years ago, is there was a European Union directive that every state in the European Union must have 3 months reserve.
So we wouldn't have done it if we hadn't been told to do it.
Correct. And here's the case in point. That the European Union didn't direct its states to have a national or a natural gas reserve. So Ireland didn't do a natural gas.
And I mean, how much of our power do we generate using oil anymore? It's mostly natural gas.
Yeah, so we're the only EU country of the entire 27 that doesn't have a natural gas reserve.
We are converting Moneypoint to oil generation so that we'll get some power should the balloon go up.
Yeah, absolutely. So the resilience piece is really important. We plan quite poorly. We kind of wing it. We say, look, it'll be grand. But unfortunately, as we've learned over the last 3 years, even the last 5 years, these black swan events are happening with much more frequency and much more severity. We nearly get one big one every single year, whether it's Brexit, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's the Middle East. These things are happening and we need to be prepared and get ahead of them.
So this consultation, when it happens, and there'll be everyone from fishermen to wind farm owners or prospective owners who will contribute to all of this. What is the outcome that we are seeking?
Yeah, I think what we're seeking is firstly to identify what are the actual threats. So what are we prioritising as the threats? And then looking at what kind of actions are we going to take to mitigate those and how do we mitigate those risks? I think if you look at it from the energy security perspective, and I think that's an important one, you know, we at the moment, you said oil or 60% comes through gas. If you looked at Saturday morning, 10% through the interconnectors were exposed there as well. So I think, again, I don't think it's fair to say there's no war gaming done. I think there is an amount of analysis that's done. It's looking at, have we the capacity to respond when the response is required? And if we don't, then what's our next step? So I think this document should give us that kind of strategic prioritisation so that then we can decide who's our lead agency, who's our support agency, where do we go?
Okay, because with a power grid, you need a baseline which is dependable, which may mean either oil or gas. We've now given up coal finally last week in money points. So you need a baseline of oil and gas to allow for a huge amount of wind to be stable on the grid. So that's an important consideration.
I think if you move forward from the government targets, like if you look that we're going to move towards renewable energy, well, then we need to ensure that we've got the ability to secure our critical maritime infrastructure. So if we do reach government targets, we're now going to have, you know, hundreds of very large turbines sitting off our coast, and somebody somewhere has to decide what's going to be our national response. Is it the response of the operator, the owner? If it's a national strategic capacity, who is responsible for the securing and the response? And I think that's why this strategy is going to be so important, because it's going to outline that. And also it will allow us to invest more in our naval capability, and particularly in the people who man these platforms, because that's where the really, really important piece is. We can invest in all the infrastructure and the capacity, but if we don't have the people who are qualified and skilled, you know, then we have, as I said, a stranded asset.
Now, it's likely that we will have to build massive electricity storage in some form, whether it's in the form of hydrogen, which, you know, is a bit kind of troublesome, but if it's direct electricity, massive batteries located wherever they might be located. Moving on to the general picture of defence, I mean, secure your seas without securing your skies.
Yeah, you've got to do both.
You have to do both.
In fact, as Marie will tell you, she was the former lieutenant commander, she captained the ship, so she knows that the liaison between the naval service and the Air Corps, particularly Maritime Squadron, is very, very good. So Maritime Squadron, they have two brand new aircraft in Baldonnel, and they obviously liaise and do maritime patrols out in our territorial and economic waters as well. So look, it's very, very, very important, not just to get the naval side, the maritime side, but also the air picture as well.
So you've got people at sea level in ships having a look around. You've got overhead stuff. It should come from satellites as well, if we have friendly people who will offer us that kind of cover. And then you need below sea security, all of those things.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm so interested to see where this goes. So when I was the command at sea, you know, I didn't have subsurface capability really outside of diving operations. You know, even our air picture wasn't as detailed. That's only 10 years ago.
So you wouldn't know if a sub was underneath you?
No, I didn't have a capacity on board my ship at the time. However, now we're moving into a space where the investment in the towed sonar array means we're going to initiate our capacity in this area. And I think the important piece now is, where do we go next from a strategic capacity development in the subsea domain, and then also looking at the air domain, and then the integration of primary radar systems and C2 systems as well. So, I mean, this document, this strategy is so critical in terms of our future, in terms of maritime security and defence.
OK, so now with the development of this strategy and the equipment that comes with it, and hopefully the training of personnel, we'll know what's going on. Cathal, what can we do about it if we find this a sub being naughty down below?
Yeah, well, the first thing you do is you try and detect it. We should be able to do it when the sonar comes on stream in 2027, so it's about 2 years down the tracks. Next thing you try and do is you try and deter activity. So it's like having if you walk around New York, you'd obviously see a cop on every block, basically. That high visibility policing is very important to deter crime. Same with the Garda Síochána here, but yeah, High visibility naval patrolling also does the same. We need these platforms out at sea, basically, as a visible.
But this is where we come to impunity. If they know you can't do anything about them, can they still not act with impunity and snap the fibre optics or snap the energy cables?
Yeah, so we should have that capability. We don't. But again, we shouldn't just look at taking on the sonar in 2 years' time and then looking at a more kinetic ability and capability afterwards. For example, we've had sonar, we've had depth charges, we've had torpedoes in the past, in the 1960s and 1970s, when Ireland was a much poorer country. So I take your point for sure. Be able to detect, but you must be able to deter. You must have a big stick as well to keep people at bay, and that's what's probably the next step down. Just in relation to the strategy, it's very important that people should realise that the portal is actually open at the moment. It's open for the next 3 weeks until the 11th of July, and everybody should make a submission. I mean, we're all islanders. We live on an island. We're from a seafaring nation, and we haven't really looked to seaward in the past, but we should. And it's a very, very simple portal. There's 8 questions you're asked. Just fill it up if you have a typewriter.
What's the portal called?
Just Google it. So Irish Maritime
Consultation on the National Maritime Security Strategy. Yeah. I think one thing that's really important as well to frame for the listeners, Pat, you know, we say we're a small island off the northwest coast of Europe. We're actually a very large ocean state. We're actually one of the biggest ocean states in the world. And therefore, we have this massive ocean to protect, but also to look at the economic opportunity that comes with it. And from a blue economy perspective, if we want FDI in terms of energy security, in terms of technological advances, we need to be able to show that we're serious about security and serious about defence. So I think that's a really important piece.
So if we want the investors to come in and do what we have speculated we can do, become the Saudi Arabia of wind, that sort of thing. I know you hate that
expression. I don't align with that terminology, no, but I think if we're going to move
to... No, but
to
it's an endless resource.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But there's also a responsibility. And also, just to re-emphasise, Ireland isn't a laggard here. Like, if you read any of the security strategies, the European one, the British one, the New Zealand one, everyone's in the same place when it comes to the defence critical maritime infrastructure. Everybody's trying to come up with, you know, what's the technology, what's the equipment, how are we going to respond, is it going to be drones, subsurface, you know, what do we need to be ready to do? And there's also the civil military research and industry perspective here. We need to align with everyone who has knowledge and capacity. We need to be working together collaboratively to look at what are the best opportunities. So whilst we're very focused on the defence side, we also need to realise we have huge expertise here in our academics and in our industry partners as well. So I think it's important they come to the table too.
The difficulty is kind of catching the ne'er-do-wells in action. I mean, even in the Baltic states, when cables are snapped, they suspect somebody, but they don't know, they can't prove. And that's always going to be a difficulty. If suddenly digital communication stops through one particular conduit, now we probably have backups to the backups to the backups to make sure that the digital flow is not totally interrupted. But at the same time, finding the culprit and punishing the culprit may be impossible.
And maybe that's not, maybe that's not where the focus needs to be. Maybe the focus needs to be ensuring the redundancy, because from a maritime perspective, redundancy is critical. Three is two, two is one, one is none. So I think backup, but also I think if you focus on just looking for the threat actor specifically, you're not looking at the broader strategic perspective. So I think we need to look at interoperability with our European counterparts. We need to look at leveraging other systems, other process. The common information sharing environment is a really big step that Ireland took. We went into this partnership with 10 other European nations. It's really given us fantastic oversight. The Marsour project has given us huge capacity. So, you know, we could get sucked into just looking at one specific, but if we go broad again and strategic, you know, partnerships, interoperability, these are really, really critical elements of a national maritime
strategy. Now, Carl, will that prompt a debate about neutrality and so on in Dáil Éireann, do you suspect?
Maybe a small one, but to be fair, I don't think maritime security is as controversial as land security at all, actually.
But the partnerships that Maria talks about.
Yeah, but I don't see why it should, because cooperation is completely normal. I mean, it's good to have good neighbours. It's normal to reach out to the UK, normal to reach out to France. It'd be unusual if you didn't. And I think a far bigger controversy would be, you mean you haven't been speaking to your neighbours? I mean, that's insane. It's a very poor way of doing business. So I suppose just to finish up, Pat, the portal is wide open. You haven't the 11th of July. And all you have to do is Google Ireland Maritime Security Strategy. You're asked a series of 8 questions. And the key point is this: they expect to publish it by Christmas. So it's not something that you submit a submission and you never hear about it again. Margaret Stanley is probably one of the better Department of Defence civil servants. She's actually taking a lead in the project, and she'll do it by Christmas.
One of the key things you mentioned in passing there, Marie, was people. Mm-hmm. Having the right people. You know, you might have all this information which is almost automatically collected by these machines down below. But then you've got to have people who can interpret them, who can work with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Toad Sonar Array, in terms of my capability, I could launch it because of my seamanship skills, but could I interrogate the data that comes out of it or do the analysis? No. And would I want to? No. That's where you need your experts. But I think, you know, the numbers in the Navy, we've spoken about at length, they're at a critical juncture at this moment in time. There's no point in looking backwards. We need to look forwards. If I was an 18, 19, 20 year old in Ireland at the moment looking for a career, look at the fact that the maritime has become a strategic priority, defence and security, investment in equipment. I would be saying, if I was 18 again, this is the place I want to go. A tech enabled Navy, digitalisation, you know, autonomous vehicles, unmanned, like, this is huge. So I think...
And having spent maybe 5, 6, 10 years in the Navy, the possibilities with the maritime industries that are coming down that would be endless.
Huge, And I think also that's a new piece. I mean, you know, traditionally when I joined, you joined for your life. You joined for a full career, 40 years or 20 years. Now you can go in for 5 years and have a huge amount of experience and you're very employable. And also we need to look the other way around. Bring in external experts, bring in expertise from the private sector, look at new manning systems, new approaches. I think we really need to upskill because we really need to double what we have at the moment to deal with what's coming down the line.
Now, we haven't mentioned fish at all. And yet that's a hugely important part of the economy, the blue economy.
Yeah, I sit on the State Board of Bordy Skiwara. I mean, we've just released the business of seafood, 1.25 billion, up to 15,000 jobs in the coastal between direct and indirect employment. And I think that perspective that fishermen have, that because the Navy ships aren't at sea because of the impact of those
people. They can be eyes and ears.
Yeah. So we really need to get back out there and understand what's happening in our waters. So the IUU, illegal, unregulated, unreported fishing, may not necessarily be in our domain yet, but with the warming oceans, you know, these vessels will be coming up for fish species that aren't there at the moment.
All right. And finally, Carl, I should ask you about the B-2 bombers that headed off to the Gulf over the weekend. They were told they didn't fly over us, but if they had, they're stealth bombers, we wouldn't have seen them, would we?
No. And even if we did, we wouldn't even be able to intercept or do anything, nor probably should we have anyway. But I mean, they don't need to fly over Ireland because they can refuel mid-air. I suppose just finally, I agree entirely with what Marie was saying there, that a ship is only as good as its crew. And the Navy, while they might say they're in the maritime business, they're really in the people business. Mm. And we need to get people in. And we need to retain the people we have, first of all. So there is need to be a service commitment scheme. And number two, we should be targeting the people who've left the Navy in the last 5 years.
Get them back
and say, look, the pay rates have improved. Would you consider rejoining? And thirdly, then, we need to focus on specialists, as Marie was saying, direct entry, get them in with competitive salaries and keep them in. You don't retain people, you retain experience. And that's why it's really important.
Cathal Berry, former Armoury Ranger with the Defence Forces, and Lieutenant Colonel retired Marie Gleeson, Managing Director of NAVMAR Leadership and Blue Economy Advocate. Thank you both very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.